You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Kind of an odd time right now for the AL and NL West as the trade deadline is approaching. I'm Allison Flitter from MLB.com. If we look at the contenders and the teams that are in first place are really struggling, whereas the teams that are sort of out of it have put together some wins. So what does this all mean for the trade deadline? It's very hard to say. Let's talk to our reporters about that.
Brian, I really do think that the Astros have something cooking here. That's not saying a whole lot, obviously. Everybody knows that. And they might even be getting better soon. So what do they still need? Do they need to do more to tweak this team, or do you think they'll sort of stand pat?
Yeah, I mean, they could make a couple of changes. I mean, number one, they, like any team, they could add a starting pitcher. And I think they're eyeing left-handed relief help, too. And I think that almost might be their biggest need. Tony Sipp hasn't had a great season. And it's always nice to have that other lefty down there. Remember last year they went out and got Oliver Perez late in the year. So I think we could see that kind of similar deal. Starting pitching is a little more tricky because everybody needs it. And there's a lot of teams that want starting pitchers. The starting pitching trade market isn't deep. So you might have to overpay for a guy who maybe isn't better than anything you have right now. I mean, Keuchel's pitched really well his last five starts. McHugh's pitched well his last five or six. McCullers, he's still got to work on getting his pitch count done, but he's done a nice job lately. Then you have Pfister, who's been their most consistent starter despite a couple of hiccups recently. And then Mike Fiers is the fifth guy. But, I mean, if you go out and trade for somebody, how much better than Mike Fiers is he going to be? And if you do get a guy who's a huge, substantial upgrade, you're going to have to give up a ton to get him. And they've already made a couple of deals like that in the last couple of years. So I think starting pitching is going to be really tricky at this point. So it should be interesting, though, to see what they do the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay. So they just signed the greatest Cuban player possibly ever, or certainly the greatest Cuban prospect, in Gurriel. And I guess he's going to need a little bit of seasoning, and then there's also, like, visa issues. So we may not see him for about a month. Alex Bregman, if I'm reading all the media reports, then I'm totally confused because some are saying he's coming up now and some are saying that he's coming up later and some are saying he's coming up somewhere in between, which is why I have to get off Twitter for a while just to clear my head. So what do you foresee? What is realistic? Where are they going to fit everybody? How is this going to be? Like, ideally, when you look at the team with those two guys, like, who is actually going to be getting the playing time?
Yeah, well, to go back to what you said at first, I mean, no one really knows, of course, when they're coming up, so it's all speculation. So allow me to speculate. I think Bregman will be up by the end of the month, and I think Gurriel will be up in early August. So, but I think, you know, they're both knocking on the door. As far as how they fit in, I think one of the big thing in all this, I think, is going to be the DH. Astros have gotten very little production out of the DH, and I think one of these two guys will DH pretty regularly. They can play third. We know Bregman's done that in the minor leagues. Gurriel can do that. I mean, he's played third a lot. So they both can play third, and I think Gurriel will be in the outfield a little bit. Maybe Bregman, although Bregman hasn't played the outfield in the minor leagues. But I think, they can move Valbuena to first pretty easily. Yeah, that's probably going to mean A.J. Reed goes to the minors, and a couple of guys are going to have to be taken off the roster. But if these guys can hit like their track record suggests that they can, then you're adding two pretty potent bats to your lineup. And, you know, Hinch is going to have a lot of opportunities to mix and match. We saw him the last game they played in Seattle over the weekend. Altuve was the DH. He went 4-for-5. Altuve hates DH, but I think we could see Altuve and Correa, especially Altuve, maybe even Springer, DHing a little more as we go down the stretch to kind of save their legs. And then, you know, you have Bregman or Gurriel to plug in the lineup. So, AJ's a smart guy, and I'm sure he's got mapped out exactly what he wants to do. But, you know, we asked him a couple of times over the weekend about Gurriel and Bregman, and he's like, let's talk about the guys who are here right now. So I'm sure when they walk in the door, he'll give us a little bit better idea. But they're going to come here, and if they hit, they'll play. And it's going to cost some guys their jobs, and some guys probably should be worried about that. But that's kind of the reality. It's the big leagues, and they think they have a shot to make the playoffs and add a couple of potent bats.
Obviously, the Rangers are still in first place, but the lead has shrunk. We've talked about this many times, but there are some issues. And now that we're getting closer to the trade deadline, the Rangers have been in the conversation for a lot when it comes to starting pitching, which they need. So you hear Odorizzi, Smiley, Moore. I mean, you hear a lot of names being thrown around. It looks like the Rangers are going to be pretty aggressive. Would you agree with that?
Well, Allison, the problem is a lot of these pitchers are back of the rotation, mediocre guys. I mean, there's not a whole lot of excitement up there unless the Braves really want to trade Julio Teheran. Matt Moore was once a great prospect for the Rays, but, you know, hasn't pitched that well. Odorizzi is pretty solid. It could be a seller's market out there, and they may be demanding a high price for these pitchers. So that's going to be a problem for the Rangers. I just don't see the Rangers trading Joey Gallo. I know his name comes up a lot, but I can't see the Rangers giving up Joey Gallo unless they could get someone like the Braves kid or something like that, or an Andrew Miller, or a seriously hit with some impact. If they're looking for a rotation filler and the price is too high, I don't know, if they're going to bite on that.
Yeah, I mean, is it a matter of, more about this, obviously, than anybody. Is it a matter of, like, needing bodies at this point, or is it a matter of needing more quality? Like, there's sometimes where there's teams that are just like, we need somebody who can come in and eat up some innings until we can get our guys back healthy. Because if you're talking about a healthy rotation, then it doesn't seem like there should be so much need for panicking at this point. But maybe they're a little bit further away from having a healthy rotation back. Am I making any sense? Like, what are they looking for when they're looking to fill some roles?
You brought up a couple of good points in your long question there. Number one, they've got the rotation for it is in A.J. Griffin and Kyle Loesch. And Griffin pitched really well at the beginning of the season before he went on the DL with inflammation and hasn't pitched that well lately. But in Loesch, he's been around since 2001. He's had some great years. He's 37. His velocity is down. We'll see. I mean, those guys are rotation fillers, and I don't know. Are you going to give up Joey Gallo to get a guy, just marginally better? I don't think so. But the other point is that you brought up is that, Derek Holland, Colby Lewis are ways away. Today is July 17th or 18th, and they're not going to be back until August 21st at the earliest. That's if everything goes right. I think Holland should be back, but who knows with Colby Lewis. They got a lot of work to do. Holland's just playing catch. Lewis hasn't started throwing yet. Hopes to get clearance this week, but those guys are far away. So, Loesch and Griffin are fillers in the rotation. Are they going to be able to fill for a month? They got big starts this week against the Angels and, later against, Kansas City possibly or on the next homestand. But it's just a matter of how much you want to pay for something that may only be a marginal upgrade, but would still be around for at least another month.
So Yu Darvish, I was watching a little bit of this game the other day, so he had a strong return. He didn't make it through the fifth, but that was more because of the botched double play than anything. Kind of a high pitch count, but everybody was pretty happy with what they saw from him, right? It was a matter of just being healthy, being strong, and he showed them that he was both.
Well, yeah, everybody was raving about his stuff. Joe Madden was, just raving about it, the Cubs manager. But he's only going to be able to go 85, 90 pitches a night. And if he's out there striking out 9 batters in 4 1/3 innings, that's a lot of pitches, and that's a short outing. I know they talked about in spring training about him using his fastball more and getting quicker outs. I don't know if Darvish is ever going to adapt to that mode of pitching. The guy likes his strikeouts. He likes to really use all his pitches. The guy looks good. The question is how much endurance does he have, how much durability he has, and if he can give him more than 5 innings an outing.
Yeah, the Mariners, I mean, Greg, I don't want to dump on them too much, but it's been a pretty long time that they haven't really put anything together. But I have to say, like, Scott Servais really summed up the last game against the Astros, the worst game, the, quote, worst game we've played all year. So 4 errors, 5 hit into double plays. I mean, no scoring with the bases loaded. So it was just one of those, was it like a kind of a, just a, like a temporary thing, you think, or is this sort of indicative of what's going on with this team?
Well, they haven't been playing great, but this was certainly an anomaly as far as the number of things you can do wrong in one game. Rarely do you see a Major League Baseball game that goes quite that poorly, and when they'll obviously want to flush quickly. They haven't played well against Houston, and that's been a problem. They went in, I remember, July 4th, we rolled into Houston. They were tied with the Astros. It can be a big series, see if they could kind of make a push, make some headway there, and they end up getting swept in Houston, and then come out of the All-Star break and get three more against Houston, maybe a chance, and they drop two or three there. So they're now four games back at Houston in third place, and of course Texas running out front there. So that was a series that they wanted to make a mark in, and didn't. Kind of made it the wrong way, as you said. And Sunday certainly just one of those days. You know, they just came out and a couple errors in the first inning. You know, they end up with four for the game. Could have had more. They had a fly ball that Seth Smith dropped. They called it a sun double, but bounced off of him. So you know, it's just kind of one of those games. Five times the bases loaded, and they're 0 for 5. Just didn't come up with a big hit when they wanted to, when they needed it. Just things kind of spiraled. So it's just one of those games. They hit into five double plays, as you mentioned. I mean, it's hard to do all these things in one game. And when you add them up, you get a manager who says, yep, that was bad as we've been, and we'll flush that one. So, you know, baseball's a funny game. You can come out the next day and things can look different, but that certainly was a clunker, and they need to get past it and move forward.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad for Mike Montgomery. I didn't watch the entire game, but it seemed, I mean, terrible defense behind him. It's kind of hard to assess. I mean, his stat line didn't look very good, but he had to have pitched a lot better than his numbers would say. I mean, what did you think about just how he kind of fared in that way?
Yeah, Mike's done a pretty good job. I mean, they put him in a spot start the last start before the All-Star break in Kansas City. He pitched very, very well. He's probably been, you know, if you're picking a guy that's been a highlight of this year, kind of a surprise, he's clearly it. He and Dejo Lee are kind of two guys you'd look at. And Mike has just been outstanding in the bullpen this year, and they give him a shot at start in Kansas City. He looks very good, and they keep him in the rotation again. I thought he pitched pretty well, and so did Service against the Astros. He just, as we said, didn't get much help. But I think he's going to go back in the bullpen. Interesting situation with the rotation, obviously, and Felix Hernandez coming back on Wednesday against the White Sox, and that's going to be a huge, huge lift for this team. And Taiwan Walker probably in another couple weeks away as well. So I think Montgomery's going to go back into that bullpen where he's been a stalwart for them and a big key as well. So, you know, they need to get those pieces back, and certainly Felix coming back is going to be a big one. You talk about milestones, and I look back, Felix's last start, they were nine games over 500 and rolling in first place in the AL West, and things looked awfully rosy, and not that it's all been Felix being hurt, but you know, since he's been out, obviously they've tailspun quite a bit, and part of it is you just miss that horse at the top of the rotation and a guy that saves your bullpen a lot and helps everything line up, and they'll definitely be a better team when they get King Felix back out there.
Yeah, I mean, that has to give him confidence just from making, like, a push at the end. I mean, they're not falling out of anything in terms of the wild card race. And really, I mean, the division race, well, doesn't look really great. The Rangers are certainly sputtering, and they've been sputtering long enough. But now we're thinking, okay, is this, like, you know, is this something that they can fix or something they may not be able to fix? But that does give the other teams in the division hope. And I guess when they look at what they – putting themselves all back together, then they would look largely like they did in April, part of May, when they were rolling, right?
Sure. You get Felix and Taiwan Walker as well, if he was pitching early. I mean, those are two studs, and Iwakuma's been real good. I mean, he's won 10 games, kind of held the ship afloat a little bit while those two guys have been out. So, you know, you take those kind of guys out of your rotation, and Texas has dealt with it, you know, to their credit. They've taken a lot of hits and kept on going. So, Mariners, you know, need to do that as well. But, you know, you do miss anytime you get two guys like that. I mean, it changes things. I mean, they're kind of piecing things together with Wade LeBlanc. They picked up and pitched in AAA, and he's started a couple games for him. Done okay. They brought Paxton up, and you know, he's looked impressive with his stuff. But, you know, things just kind of haven't all clicked for, you know, putting it all together for wins. Miley's struggled, and you know, they need to get him kind of squared away. So, you know, you bring in two starters like Felix, and if we see the same Taiwan Walker that we saw earlier in the year. I mean, he was the best pitcher they had in the first month and a half of the season. So, you know, if they get him back on track and Felix back in there, that certainly changes the complexion of this team. Starting pitching takes you a long, long way in baseball. And if they get those guys back and keep everybody else healthy, then certainly I think they can be in the mix for a wild card spot if they can get things going. Their offense has been good. It's been solid all year, and there's no reason to see that change.
Yeah, I have not given up on them. So on a much happier note at this point, Ken Griffey Jr. being inducted in the Hall of Fame in a very short amount of time. So you are going to be there. What are you most looking forward to? I mean, this is a huge deal, obviously, for the Mariners organization. But what is that? How are you feeling going into this and being able to cover this very exciting time?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, Jr. is incredible personality and figure, and not just in Seattle, but across the sport. And it's going to be fun. I think, without a doubt, I think everybody that knows Junior is looking forward to his speech. I mean, this is the guy who if he lets his emotions out and just kind of, you know, speaks from the heart, I think it's going to be pretty darn good to see what he has to say Sunday. So looking forward to that. You know, he says it's still a work in progress. He says he doesn't have things all written down in stone. And I'm curious, kind of one of the questions is he going to just talk, or is he going to read it? And the hope from a lot of people is he just kind of gets up there and talks from the heart and doesn't read from a script. I was talking to Harold Reynolds, a former teammate of his, and a good buddy, that he thinks he's going to just go for it and just wing it and be himself. And if he does that, he's a pretty entertaining guy. So it's going to be fun to see that. Just to see, you know, Junior and Mike Piazza on that big stage in Cooperstown, I think, you know, just to be there is a privilege, obviously, and to lead up to that, the chance to go through all the festivities with the Griffeys and things, their family and things. It'll be quite a weekend in Cooperstown. There's a huge contingent from the Mariners going back. I know the fans as well. First Mariner, Randy Johnson went in, and obviously he was a big part of Mariner history, but he didn't go in as a Mariner. Ken going in as the first full-time, real position player. The player at all in Mariner history is the guy from the Mariners. So that's a big moment in this franchise, and who better to do it than Ken Griffey Jr.?
Yeah, so going to the Cooperstown, I know this is your first time. For anybody who has not been, you don't, like, fly at Cooperstown. You have to fly somewhere else and you have to drive. So, like, last year when we went for Biggio, we flew into Albany and then drove. I think you can fly into Binghamton. There's a couple other places. Okay, so I want to know your travel schedule. You are going from the furthest most point in this country to get to Cooperstown. So this is highly entertaining. So what does your itinerary look like? I need to know. Where are you connected? Obviously, you've got to be connected somewhere. How long are you going to be flying, and where are you flying into?
Yeah, we're going into Albany. I mean, that's with any East Coast trip from Seattle. It's an all-day endeavor, pretty much. I mean, you lose the 3 hours, and you get there. We'll get there in the evening in Albany, and I think it's about an hour and a half drive from Albany to Cooperstown. But it's I know an idyllic area of the country, and definitely looking forward to seeing that part of the Upper New York as well, and just kind of soaking it all in. You made that trek last year, as you said, for the Biggio, and I think it's going to be an eye-opener for all Mariner fans to get out there and see baseball history and take part in all that. Should be a great time.
Alden, my goodness. So it's sort of like recharging the batteries, restarting the clock, whatever you want to say, and the Angels sort of took that and ran. Jared Weaver had a really good outing. So is this a sign that maybe things are starting to fix themselves, or do you think that maybe he's still going to have to battle through the rest of the season?
Can it be seen that the White Sox are just an eminently flawed team that chases everything and weren't as good as they were at the start of the season?
Oh, man, that's no fun, but okay, yeah, let's go there.
I mean, well, look, Allison, I mean, maybe things are turning around, and, you know, we've talked about on this podcast about how the Angels may not be a true contending team, but they're probably not as good, as bad as their record shows. But, you know, you have to also, you know, look at reality here. There's still more than 10 games below 500. And although it's a great sign that they got this starting pitching, this is still July. I still expect the Angels to trade some veteran players. And, you know, I think one thing that this White Sox series did kind of show us or kind of, you know, bring to the forefront is a very interesting question that the Angels are going to face this month, and that is whether or not they would be willing to trade any of their starting pitchers. You know, we've talked about, and most of the talk about the Angels has been about how they could part ways with some of their veterans, guys like, you know, Joe Smith or Houston Street or Giovanni Soto. But the guys that are really going to get attention from other teams are going to be these starting pitchers, specifically Matt Shoemaker, who has turned his season around significantly. I don't know if there's much precedent for the way that he has turned his season around since getting called back up in, I believe, early May. Whether Jared Weaver, who is a free agent at the end of the year and is at the very least eating up some innings, he's already surpassed 100 innings, whether they would trade him. Whether they would trade your favorite guy, Allison Hector Santiago, who
no!
perpetually on the rumor mill. That's the interesting question I think that the Angels are going to face this month, because if you start looking ahead, you know, Billy Epler did talk about how he doesn't see this organization rebuilding, and I kind of, you know, tend to believe that to some degree. They need starters, though, to fill out next year's rotation. Andrew Heaney will not be a part of it. Jared Weaver and C.J. Wilson probably won't either. They're going to be free agents at the end of the year. Garrett Richards may not either. You know, he's still undergoing that stem cell therapy. He's got another checkup on August 7th, which is basically going to decide whether or not he needs Tommy John surgery. And you look at the free agent market, there is not a lot out there. And, you know, needless to say, the Angels also don't have much from which to trade from. They need starters to fill out next year's rotation, and that's when it starts getting interesting. Do they trade Matt Shoemaker? Do they trade Hector Santiago? Do they trade Jared Weaver, who is a lifelong Angel and has a full no-trade clause? Those are going to be the interesting questions the Angels have to answer this month, because they're going to get calls, and I'm sure they already have gotten calls for some of their starting pitchers.
And Jared Weaver is an older player, obviously. I mean, do you think that he would entertain a trade? I mean, he'd be going to a contender, so it'd be a better chance to win, right?
That's tough. You know, I know Jared Weaver loved pitching for the Angels. He took less money to stay with the Angels, but I also know he wants to win. And, you know, I would not be shocked if he would approve a trade to a team that wants to win now, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's only 2 months out of the season, and I'm sure he'd love to pitch in the postseason. He misses that. He loves a pennant race. And, you know, it's not like he'd be going there long term. It's just 2 months. Maybe he could kind of increase his free agent value if he pitches well on a contending team. It wouldn't be surprised to see him entertain something like that.
Coming out of the break, so they took 2 of 3 from the Blue Jays and 2 of 3 from the Astros. So two very, very good teams, two teams that are right now in wild card contention and still in the division race. So, you know, it doesn't matter a whole lot with the A's, who are definitely not in contention, but I guess it has to, from a day-to-day standpoint, be very encouraging for them that they were able to put in a little bit of good baseball together.
Yeah, and that's something, I mean, you know, talking about them being out of contention, they obviously don't want to hear that. You know, the guys that are in the clubhouse want to believe that, you know, they can still make a run. And while it might not be really realistic at this point, you know, they want to put together, you know, a good string of play. And they've got this youth movement happening. The day after the All-Star break ended, they brought up Ryan Healy, who played in the Futures game for them. And they kind of came out and said, you know, look, he's going to be our everyday third baseman. And they wanted to also see more of Jake Smolinski in center field, which meant to reduce roles for Coco Crisp and Danny Valencia, which is probably shocking for people on the outside who have maybe been following the A's a little bit, know how big of a producer Valencia has been. Crisp has sort of kind of resurrected his career this year. But I think at this point, it's just important for the A's to see what they have in some of the young guys, because they realize that at this point, the future, you know, may be more important than the present. And they've got a really good crop of players, specifically position players coming up. And we've already seen some of the young pitchers come up, guys like Daniel Mingden, Dylan Overton, Sean Manaea, and you know, I think they're kind of trying to figure out what they have to piece together here in these next couple of years.
So does that mean that we could see the A's being somewhat active at the trade deadline? I know that we're still about a week and a half away, but do you feel like because they want to look at these young guys that maybe some of the guys that are losing playing time, they could be on the chopping block?
Yeah, I mean, Valencia could definitely be had. I don't know that there are many suitors out there for him. He's bounced around so much. And, you know, it'll be kind of interesting to see if the A's can get something for him before the trade deadline. I think he would be, you know, a valuable piece for a contending club. But as of right now, the interest just isn't really there. And besides him, I mean, Josh Reddick remains a trade candidate, a very strong trade candidate, as is Rich Hill. But in Rich's situation, I mean, he's kind of losing value by the day. He's been out with this blister that, you know, they thought that he had it before the break, tried to pitch with it, didn't work out, made just five pitches. And so they're really trying to be careful so that same thing doesn't happen again. But, you know, as of right now, there's just no timeline for when he's going to be able to start again, let alone play catch. And I know, you know, I'm sure for contending teams out there, there's so many of them that have kept an eye on Rich Hill. You know, they probably want to see at least one start from him following this blister issue before they make a deal for him. And before this crept up, I mean, he was probably the most coveted, you know, pitching option on the market just because of his performance to this point. So probably a bummer for the A's, but, you know, I think they're hoping to avoid the deal with him and get him back on the mound soon, because I know if they can, you know, it's probably safe to assume that they would deal him unless they were, you know, 100% confident offering him a qualifying offer at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's interesting with the A's, because I see that they have, like, four games coming up with the Rays. I mean, they could really go on a little bit of a run. And I'm watching what's happening with the Yankees, where, like, the world is screaming for them to be sellers. And there's, like, the two people that insist that they're not sellers, or, like, the owner and the president. And the Yankees are kind of muddling this whole thing up by winning a few games lately. So now it's like, you know, what if they do get to be a few games over 500? And it's just, like, it just confuses, like, the situation and they don't know what to do for the future. So it's almost, I mean, it's almost good that the A's are like, no, nobody in the organization would agree with me, but that the A's are really not anywhere close to being like a borderline bubble team where they can make clear-headed decisions at the trade deadline rather than, you know, like riding some false notion that they might be contenders and then messing things up for the next couple of years.
Exactly. And they were in this exact situation at this time last year. They went on a nice little run out of the break. You know, there were maybe a few people thinking, oh, well, you know, what if they can, you know, stick in it and make a run. But it's not just about them. I mean, you know, players say every day we can only control what we do here. But at the same time, I mean, it doesn't mean the Rangers and the Mariners and the Astros stop playing. You know, all those other teams, you know, are probably going to stay in it no matter what the A's do. And there's just such a big gap right now that it just seems, you know, too hard to overcome. And that's exactly what the A's recognized last year and did what they did, you know, dealt their impending free agents, Scott Kazmir, Ben Zobrist, Tyler Clippard, and recognized that the future to them was more important. And in return, they got several good pieces in those deals. And I think we're going to probably see something similar unfold here leading up to the trade deadline.